Paul Harris filling in for McGraw today. Thanks for listening. You can follow me online at harrisonline.com or via Twitter at Paul Harris Show. A couple of years ago, I talked to an investigative reporter by the name of Ron Kessler about a book he wrote called In the President's Secret Service. It was an amazing look behind the scenes at part of our intelligence community and law enforcement community that does not get a lot of attention, doesn't want a lot of attention. They got some recently because of the two big buses that they bought for President Obama, who's been finishing up his tour in the Midwest and will use them for his campaign tour and official trips over the course of the next year, as will whoever the eventual GOP nominee is. That was a terrific discussion I had with Ron a couple of years ago. That's why I'm excited to have him back on here today, because he's got a brand new book. This one about another member of our law enforcement and intelligence community. This book is called The Secrets of the FBI. Ron, nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
You're welcome. Before we talk about the FBI, I do have to go back to our conversation from 2 years ago about the Secret Service, because then you exposed some holes in the Secret Service protection for President Obama. Specifically, as I remember, you said they were not using magnetometers, the metal detectors, at enough of his public events. And I wonder if by exposing that in your book and in our conversation and elsewhere, whether you were able to change the way the Secret Service looked at this problem and if they actually have done anything differently.
There have not been many changes since the book came out. They still don't keep up to date with the latest firearms, for example. They still cut corners. They still overwork agents. The question is when the campaign gets going, whether they're going to start cutting corners with protecting the candidates, because that's what they were doing before by not using magnetometers. But even with Joe Biden as vice president, they would sometimes not use magnetometer screening. It's just like putting passengers into an airplane without putting them through metal detectors.
And this with a president who has had more threats against him than any other in history, right?
Yeah, the threat level increased some 400% after he took office. It's leveled off somewhat since then, but it's still quite high.
Makes me just want to buy a copy of the book and send it to the head of the Secret Service. Do you know for a fact whether they read your book?
Oh, yeah, they definitely are aware of the book and read it, and some of the Obama White House people read it. And, you know, it's typical of government. They just will ignore threats until it's too late.
All right, now let's talk a little bit about the FBI book, The Secrets of the FBI. Because you have written about so many parts of our law enforcement and intelligence community, including a book called The CIA at War several years ago, I'm curious about the connectedness of the FBI and our other intelligence community agencies, particularly in the 10 years since 9/11, because we heard so much about how they are going to have to start sharing information that they did not share before. A decade later, has that gotten any better, Ron?
Yeah, there's been a tremendous change, partly because the Patriot Act got rid of the so-called wall that Janet Reno erected, which prevented the FBI from sharing information with the CIA and vice versa, or even with their own agents. And secondly, the National Counterterrorism Center was established, where FBI and CIA people sit side by side 24 hours a day analyzing information. And now, you can be in big trouble for not sharing information, whereas before it was the other way around. And the bottom line is, we have not been attacked since 9/11, and it is because of the FBI mainly, as well as the CIA, which gives tips. Every few months there are FBI arrests of terrorists. It's become a very prevention-oriented agency, meaning that it considers putting people in jail secondary. The first consideration is developing leads on new plots and new sources of information. But the most astonishing material in this book, The Secrets of the FBI, is how the FBI breaks into homes and offices and even embassies to plant bugging devices without getting caught and shot as burglars. And the FBI actually gave me this material. I simply couldn't believe it. I thought I would be arrested, or the people giving it to me would be arrested. But actually, Bob Mueller, the FBI director, approved given it to me for this book. It's about 20% of the book, and it's so unbelievable you wouldn't put it in a movie because nobody would believe it. Several weeks before a break-in, it could be a terrorist home, a mafia home, a spy location, or it could be an embassy. The FBI will conduct surveillance and determine who goes in, who goes out, and then on the night of the break-in, they will watch any individual who might go back to the premises from their home. And if they do, they will divert them. They'll stage a phony traffic accident or dress as police officers and stop them or open a fire hydrant in the area so nobody can go back. They will take a photo of any dog that might be in the premises, show it to a veterinarian who's on contract, and he prescribes just the right amount of tranquilizer to shoot into the dog with the dart gun as the break-in begins. And then at the end of the break-in, the FBI will shoot him up again with some other drug to wake him up. They also bring their own, and these agents are called TAC Ops agents, Tactical Operations Agents. They bring their own dust, because if they disturb some dust on a desk or a coffee table, they want to replace that with their own dust. They take a photo of the front of houses sometimes and blow it up into a huge tarp and then hide behind that in order to pick locks in the middle of the night or defeat alarm systems. So this big tarp is draped over the front of the house. The agents are behind it picking a lock. They will create phony bushes for the same reason. Two agents will hide behind this bush and then move it slowly towards the front door in the middle of the night, and that way they shield themselves from passers-by. They go to elevator school to learn how to control elevators, and if they're going to bug an office suite in an office building, they may go on an elevator on top of the elevator, ride up and down, middle of the night, get off, go into the suite, put the bugs in. In the morning, they get back on the elevator, and then they walk out in business suits. And so far, no agent has been shot, but there have been a number of close calls. One was in New York with a mafia apartment where there was a mafia hitman who was about to pull off a big hit job, and the FBI thought that he wasn't in the area, but turned out he was, and they heard the key in the lock. And so the two agents who were putting the bugs in jumped in the bathroom. One got behind the shower curtain and had his gun drawn. The other turned on the water in the sink and took off his shirt and pretended that he belonged in the apartment. And when this guy came in, he said, what the F are you doing here? And the guy fell for it. The hitman fell for it. As he was leaving, he said to the agents, don't forget to lock up behind you.
These are amazing stories, and you know, you're right. It does sound like something directly out of Hollywood. Do they need special legal authority to do this, warrants or other things that are approved by anyone outside the FBI?
Yes, it's all approved by court order. Every single operation is approved by court order.
And when they do this, you mentioned mafia figures. Who else might be the target of this sort of break-in surveillance and bug placing?
Alger James and Robert Hansen, the two spies who were later convicted. By the way, I present the real story of how the FBI got onto Robert Hansen, who was an FBI agent.
Yep.
As opposed to the version in the movie Breach, which is almost totally fictitious. It gives all the credit to one low-level support employee, Eric O'Neill, who really had almost nothing to do with it. Terrorists, for example, Zazi, who was going to blow up subways in New York, the recent terrorist who wanted to blow up George Bush's home in Dallas, all those involved break-ins by the by TAC Ops. John Gotti, the FBI broke into his social club and created electrical fixtures, replaced electrical fixtures with fixtures that had bugs in them, and of course the beauty was that the power supply is right there, they didn't need batteries. Way back, the FBI recorded the induction ceremony by the mafia in Rhode Island, where they pricked the finger of new members, and the new members swore allegiance to the FBI, to the mafia, omerta, meaning silence, upon pain of death. Another little trick is, let's say they want to bug a mafia guy in New York, they will introduce a lot of static on his telephone line. He calls repair service. Well, of course, it's the FBI that answers, and they say they'll be right over, and sure enough, agents go over in telephone company uniforms, in a telephone company truck. They replace the phone, but of course, it has a bug in it.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI actually showed me an actual bug. It was the size of a postage stamp, and it could record for 21 hours or transmit all in stereo, as you wish. So that really, if they hear anybody trying to do debugging, they just turn it off so that it won't be detected. And so, you know, people who try to do debugging almost never find any real FBI bug.
Wow.
The FBI will actually will make their own bugs in a building which I visited, the only journalist to ever go there, called the Engineering Research Facility in Quantico, Virginia. And it's a big euphemism for bugging building and wiretapping building, because they also arrange wiretaps there, which is almost always done electronically now. You don't climb up on a telephone pole and put a bug on the wire, but rather they simply instruct the telephone companies, showing that they have a court order, to hook up this line to that line, and that it's transmitted by broadband to this facility, which in turn sends it to the local field office.
We're talking with Ronald Kessler, the author of The Secrets of the FBI. That's his new book. I'm Paul Harris here on the Big 550 KTRS. Ron, as I mentioned, you've written books not only about the FBI, but also about the Secret Service and the CIA. And when you hear stories about some of the techniques that they use, you know, some of it sounds really, really cool. Some of it sounds like, you know, ooh, spy movie stuff from our childhood. Do you ever say to them things like, what do you mean you bring your own dust?
Well, I tell you, I was so, so amazed that I was given this. I just, you know, I was almost speechless. I didn't want to say anything because I was afraid that they would stop telling me. But actually, Bob Mueller, the did approve giving it to me. During one of these interviews, an FBI agent who was assigned to public affairs to sit in actually interjected and questioned whether the person giving it to me should be given it to me, that it was too secret. Well, the person who was giving it to me was Louis Griever, the executive assistant director of the FBI. He is the third-ranking FBI official, and yet here's this agent questioning whether he knows what he's doing.
Yep.
So that's how amazing it was that I was given this material.
You start the book by writing about TACOPS, and you obviously got inside the agency and talked to people from Mueller all the way down and got some great inside information. But then towards the back of the book, you have a chapter in there about the FBI's role in the killing of Osama bin Laden. SEAL Team 6 got all the credit for going in there and taking out Osama bin Laden. What was the FBI's role beforehand? I can imagine afterwards they're all their forensic work, but what did they do beforehand to possibly help out the SEALs?
The FBI trained the SEALs on what to look for, what evidence to seize, how to pack it up, and how to preserve it, and now it is in the custody of the FBI laboratory. And what the FBI found was they thought that they could match bin Laden's fingerprints with fingerprints on some documents that had been seized earlier. They thought they were his fingerprints. It turned out there was not a match. So the fingerprints on the papers were not his, but they did match his DNA, and they also used facial recognition software to identify him. So it was bin Laden, but his fingerprints will never be matched.
And afterwards, they were involved in all of that forensic work and doing that, but they were never involved in the actual raid itself, right?
No, it was just the SEALs.
Gotcha. And while we're talking about Al-Qaeda and terrorism, you also have a chapter in the book about suitcase nukes, which has got to be an ongoing concern for the FBI, or is it?
Yeah, I interviewed the head of the WMD directorate within the FBI, who's a real expert on this, and he said that, you know, there's really no such thing as suitcase nukes. They haven't quite progressed to that, but still, I interviewed Bob Mueller, the FBI director, and he said what does keep him up at night is the fear of a WMD attack involving radiological material or biological material, which could be brought in, you know, pretty easily, and even by lone wolves, as well as by Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, and an attack on airplanes, because Al-Qaeda still wants to do that. So even though the FBI has really had a tremendous record of success in stopping plots, he's saying that definitely one could still occur, and that's what keeps him up at night.
Ron, congratulations on once again getting unprecedented access and turning it into a heck of a book. It reads like fiction, but it's real life. The stories that you have in here are remarkable and really gripping, and that's a testament to your style and to all of your hard work. Congratulations on all of that.
Thank you so much.
Ronald Kessler, the book is called The Secrets of the FBI. I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.